Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Augustinian Institute. This talk is delivered by Professor Alberto Boccati.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the director and board of the Augustinian Institute, I welcome you to the last of a series of lectures organized by the Augustinian Institute, the Faculty of Theology, and the Foundation for Theological Studies of the Archdiocese. These lectures, that are collectively called the annual St. Augustine Lecture, have become a fixture on our calendar because of the high caliber of the speakers and the themes that are always relevant to our times. This year, we are honored to welcome once again the Reverend Professor Alberto Boccati, who will deliver a lecture on marriage and family in the Magisterium of the Church, love and the original vocation of the human person. I say once again because the professor has already delivered two other lectures in the past couple of days at the University of Malta. A musical interlude will be provided by a very talented artist, Mr. Jacob Portelli, who has enchanted many with his luminous compositions and heartfelt playing of the harp and violin. Before listening to the professor and the musical interval, it is my pleasure to introduce someone who definitely needs no introduction for his untiring work to raise the profile of Augustinian studies in the Maltese Islands, the Reverend Dr. Salvino Caruana, or as he is affectionately called by us, Padre Sal. Many of us present here today have benefited greatly from his unstinting efforts to organize the best courses for us year in, year out. I, for one, have the honor to say that he has been my lecturer on patristic studies at the Faculty of Theology for a good part of a decade. He is an exacting taskmaster, but he never demanded anything of us that he did not ask of himself first. Padre Sarf, over to you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sandra de Crespo. Thank you very much for your attendance, and again, thank you, Padre Alberto Boccati, for giving us so much of your talent and research. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Thank you for all for accepting our invitation for this evening's event, the closing lecture for the year, this year's edition of the 15th Annual St. Augustine Lecture. One can safely state that we are now right in the middle of the academic year 2011-2012 at the Augustinian Institute. There are still three more lectures to go, and then the closing ceremony, the distribution of the certificate of attendance on Friday, the 16th of December. The overarching theme for this year's series of lectures still is Augustine of Hippo on Christian life, the family, and marriage. Again, I must say that we have to thank God for his help throughout the events of this academic year. The number of participants in the Augustine for All series of lectures this year was of 54 participants. It is one of the few years in which we have registered an excellent turnout for every lecture. Regular participants were around 40 to 45 per lecture. Besides, many of you here present have already expressed their appreciation and thanks for most of the past lectures of this year's event. All the lecturers have done their utmost in order to put over the content of their lectures with an eye on the academic aspect of the topic they were dealing with. I am sure that the remaining ones will be just as fruitful and helpful. The theme for this year's series of three lectures for the 15th Annual St. Augustine Lecture was also closely bound with the overarching theme of the academic year. Professor Alberto Boccati has certainly hit the nail on the head with the themes of his three lectures, namely the Gospel of Family and Life, the ideological and cultural changes, his second lecture, family-related issues, 30 years after the issue of the Familiaris Consortio, the papal pronouncement on family life, and his third lecture today, Marriage and Family in the Magisterium of the Church, Love and the Original Vocation of the Human Person. The university lectures were quite poorly attended, but it is about time to change the time of this event from November perhaps to October. November is quite a busy time in the university calendar of events. The next event will be the Lectio Augustini from the third week of January to the middle of March 2012. The lectures will consist of a reading and discussion of four texts from Augustine related to marriage, family life, and virginity. Halfway through the event, we shall be organizing a three-day live-in seminar on the topic of the family, married life, and other relationships. I'm looking forward to having the first names, as the number of participants will have to be indeed small, as the place can only take a small number of couples or individual participants. It is indeed with great pleasure that tonight we are bringing to a close this year's edition of the annual St. Augustine Lecture with the discussion of such an important theme as marriage and family life in the teaching of the Church, and which shall be delivered to us by Professor Bocciate in his extremely straightforward and easy way to follow. Thank you all for your presence and help. I would like to express a word of thanks to all the team around the organization of the event, Antoinette Borch, Franz Zammi, Joseph and Margaret Manicolo, my brother Edwin and Miriam, Caruana, Carmen De Bono, Alexandra Di Crespo, the Dean of the Faculty of Theology of the University of Malta, Professor Emanuele Jews, the former Dean, Professor George Grima, and the staff of Radio Maria for the two opportunities we were given to publicize the event, the Reverend Community of the Poor Clares in St. Julian's and the University setup. And last but not least, Mr. Jacob Porterly, who will be entertaining us with the excellent music on the harp. Thank you all, and I welcome you to enjoy the evening.
It is my honor to welcome our distinguished guest, Reverend Professor Roberto Bocciate, who is also an Augustinian priest, so he should be feeling at home here. Professor Bocciate is a well-known scholar in his field of specialization, and a quick search on Google that has become the yardstick of fame in this internet age, unless you're on Google, you're not famous, yielded more than 1,000 results in 0.17 seconds. So his CV is long and impressive. I was going to read it out, but we have no time. So, since we are pressed for time, I'll give just a few highlights. Professor Bocciate is the president of the Institute for Marriage and Family at the Pontifical Catholic University of Argentina. He is a bioethics full professor at the master's course on medical ethics, Institute of Bioethics, School of Medicine, Pontifical Catholic University of Argentina. I'm leaving lots of things out. Moral Theology Professor at the Augustinianum Patristic Institute, Pontifical Lateran University, Rome, Italy. Consultor for the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, so I would know where to ask. The Vatican City. Academician at the Academy of Ethics in Medicine, Argentina. Member of the Academic Council of Ethics in Medicine, National Academy of Medicine, Argentina. Visiting Scholar, Center for Clinical Bioethics, Georgetown University, Washington, D.C., USA, and a whole lot of other things, but he is also a prolific author of books and articles. There will be some time after the lecture dedicated to any questions you might wish to put to the professor. I now invite the Reverend Professor Bocciate to take the floor.
Thank you very much for the so warm presentation, and thank you to Father Dr. Professor Salvino Caruana for the invitation once more. Yes, I feel at home, absolutely, and let me tell you that we always see the Augustinian Institute in Malta like a witness for the order of St. Augustine, and a very important, a big effort that the Augustinians in Malta makes for the diffusion of the Augustine's teachings and thoughts and the patrology. But the order is an institution, and institutions are made by persons, and Father Salvino is the one who just push and bring all these results. Thank you again for the invitation, and thank you for the topic you allowed me to speak, because I'm not a patrologist. I am a moral theologian, and the family and marriage is one of the main important issues in our time. As we were talking these days, there are a lot of challenges going on, and this conference is try to bring some content, some material to think about and to promote in the way to create families as God thought that it will be. And this conference, I took many inputs and suggestions from a conference that Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone gave 2 or 3 years ago, and that touched me very much, because we will see today how we relate family and maritime family to justice and peace. And this is really, I guess, another new point of view. Let me make a short historical context in our time. Does the family have anything to offer at the beginning of the third millennium? Could one dispense with the family, or is it permanent reality with an innate value? History shows that the family's contribution to society and to the church is both considerable and good. It makes possible in every life of society, it makes possible the very life of society, as well as the incarnation of the body of Christ throughout the centuries. Historically speaking, when the person, marriage, or family is damaged, the whole of created reality is affected. The specificity of the present situation stems from the globalization of problems that in one way or another concern all the continents. We are witnessing numerous conflicts that are threatening to destabilize entire regions. In addition, the recent and profound economic crisis is having a strong impact throughout the world. If what I have just said is worrying, the individualistic and nihilistic diagnosis, which is expressed in an exacerbated anthropological pessimism, is even more serious. All this is perceptible in vast areas of our planet where widespread malaise and lack of confidence are being felt by society and shown by statistics. It is impossible to overlook the great demographic winter, that we call demographic winter, this kind of stop of growing, that is gravely threatening entire societies, the lack of meaning in the lives of so many young victims of alcohol and drugs, and extreme violence and exploitations to which we see women and children subjected today, the trafficking of organs and sex that destroys the human person, and the neglect of so many sick and elderly people who are deprived of any assistance with which to face the last years of their lives. The crisis of the educational system is in many nations that are incapable of transmitting integral knowledge, and the political and economic instability that burdens many of developing countries also deserve mention. In the whole of these descriptions, there is a common denominator: injustice. The lack of absence of rights, human rights, which derive from the personal nature of being in both the individual and social aspects of the person, have been trampled upon, diminished, or even eliminated. Exasperated individualism creates a replica of the selfishness which, as in the story of the Vulcan, is capable to devouring its own children. Hence relativism, hedonism, and utilitarianism, with their various expressions and combinations, have generated, among other things, a commercialization of the whole creation and of the human person, its centers and its summits. This is from Gaudium et Spes 12. Against this backdrop, there are two alternatives. Either the deterioration of the situation throughout the planet, reaching limits as yet unknown, or its resolution but applying an appropriate remedy. The latter must be prepared with a healthy anthropology, one of the main goals of this Pope. He always speaks about the needs of the new and right anthropology, Appropriate revives the relations that have deteriorated in every sphere. Only justice, imbued with love, will be capable to restoring dignity to the person and to the whole of creation. In this way, the civilization of love that was the great passion of the servant of God, Paul, Pope Paul VI, may become reality. Moreover, the family alone, a community of life and love, is in a condition to regenerate society through justice and peace, because in the family love presides over all things. In love, the family finds its origins and its purpose. And this family love is what can best teach values. And here is the main center of the teaching of the Church, love and values. In love, the family finds its origin and its purpose. And this family love is what can best teach values. Love, by its very nature, propagates itself. Therefore, the family is like a nursery garden in which seeds of justice and peace are cultivated, with which transform, perhaps with difficulty, the mass of the all creation. It is consequently clear that the best investment of all governments will be to help, protect, and support the family, since it is the institution without which society cannot survive. For this reason, let us once again say to family, to every family, family became what you are, from Familiaris Consortia 17, the very famous expression of Jean-Paul II. Second, family and society. The family, as the context and fullest expression of the person, is not the product of one epoch, but rather a patrimony of all ages and civilizations. The family is far more than a legal, social, or financial unit, because to speak of the family is to speak of life, of the transmission of values, of education, of solidarity, of stability, of the future, of and ultimately of love. The family is a wise institution of the Creator, in which the original vocation of the person to interpersonal communion is realized throughout the sincere gift of self. And this we touch one basic point, our vocation. When we speak about vocations, many times we think about a profession. But vocation is vocation of love, vocation of family. And maybe if we, when we discover ourselves, we discover through the values and from the and from our homes, our families. That is the transmission. The family is the first and original cell of society. In it, both the man and woman live with full meaning their differentiation and complementarity, from which the first interpersonal relationship is born. In this sense, marriage is the foundation of natural society. The family is the original cell of society, because in it the person is affirmed for the first time as a person, for himself, and freely. He is called to play a role in society similar to that of the cell in the organism. The ethical quality of society is linked to the family. It develops ethically to the extent that it lets him itself be modeled by all the constituents of good of the family. Not all forms of cohesiveness serve and contribute to achieving authentic sociability. Necessarily, the family must be a family. It is worth noting that its history should develop as a community of life and love, in which each of its members is appreciated in his uniqueness, as husband or wife, father or mother, son or daughter, brother or sister. In this way, personal dignity will be fulfilled, respected, given that interpersonal relations are lived freely, that is, out of love. This is not achieved merely by the living together. The family must be a home in which there is heartfelt acceptance, encounter, and dialogue, disinterested availability, general service, and deep solidarity. thus the family becomes the context in which the true sense of freedom, justice, and love can be formed. This must take place in freedom, since only on the basis of freedom is it possible to form responsible people. On the basis of justice, since only in this way is the dignity of others respected. And on the basis of love, since respect for others is ultimately perfect when each one is loved for him or herself. The family, therefore, has a specific social function outside the family environment that consists in acting and participating in social life as a family and because it is a family. However, to contribute to the good of the person, to humanization and to society's good, it is necessary for the family to respect the overall scale of values that make it a community of life and love. In turn, society must always include among its fundamental tasks the achievement of the common good, which could be described thus: the common good does not consist in the simple sum of the particular goods of each subject of a social entity, belonging to everyone and to each person. It is and remains common because it is indivisible, and because only together is it possible to attain it, increase and safeguard its efficiencies with regard also to the future. This is from the Pontifical Council of Justice and Peace. For it, part the Catechism of the Catholic Church, proposing anew the definition of Gaudium et Spes 26, summarized the common good in three purposes of properties as follows. First, the common good presupposes respect for the person as such, the fundamental and inalienable rights of the human person, and the conditions for the exercise of the natural freedoms indispensable for the development of the human vocation. Second, the common good requires the social well-being and development of the group itself. Development is the epitome of all social duties. Certainly, it is the proper function of authority to arbitrate in the name of the common good between various particular interests, but it should make accessible to each what is needed to lead a truly human life: food, clothing, health, work, education, and culture. Finally, the common good requires peace, that is, the stability and security of a just order. It presupposes that authority should ensure by morally acceptable means the security of society and its members. Dynamism of justice and peace. You see how justice and peace enters in our discourse like a main center in all and transversal teaching of the Church all around. Dynamism of this justice and peace. We said earlier that justice and peace are fundamental elements of the common good that society must promote and that the family can provide or establish. Since it is the family that the gifts of justice and peace are offered, which at the same time constitute the family's proper task. Let us pause for a moment for further consider both values and their relationship to each other. Peace is one of the values transmitted by both testaments. It is far more than the absence of war. Peace represents the fullness of life. It is an effect of God's blessing upon his people. It produces fruitfulness and well-being and deep happiness. At the same time, peace is the goal of social coexistence, as appears in an extraordinary way in the messianic vision of peace described in the book of the prophet Isaiah. In the New Testament, Jesus said explicitly, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." He not only rejects violence, but goes further, saying, "Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you."
this is too much. You know that we Christians are the only religion in the world that has in his holy book the express mandate to love your enemies? It's the only one. Others speak about forgiveness, but love your enemies. We must be really a testimony of this love. We need to understand that we must love our enemies. Together with the light that comes from scriptures, the history of those shows us that the culture of peace presupposes order. The definitions of St. Augustine and Boethius defines peace as tranquility that is born from order. In turn, order proposes impartially. St. Thomas Aquinas defines order as the arrangement of things in conformity with the reference point. The reference point of the order from which peace stems is justice. Justice and peace, order, peace and justice. And maybe we can suggest our director, Dr. Caruana, maybe for another year, he will present something about the order in St. Augustine. No? Because in moral theology now, we are rediscovering the word order. No? Order, which is really a theological affirmation. No? St. Augustine speaks very clearly of the Ordo Amoris, no? And has full books on that. Justice is a fundamental value of human life. In addition, it is an indispensable reality of human coexistence. Justice must be bound to the structure of each person independently of his time, his age, or his culture. Together with good and truth, justice constitutes the trilogy of the great values of human realities, the transcendentals. On the contrary, injustice is related to evil and falsehood. Therefore, the fullness of the human being and the improvement of society are in relation to good, truth, and justice. Social coexistence thus loses its meaning if evil, error, and injustice prevail. Justice refers us directly to use, right, and in fact, one can speak of justice only if rights exist. For this reason, justice consists in giving to each one his rights, what he is due. We have the judge, the tribune of the diocese's presence. I don't want to go further in justice with your presence here. The triple distinction between commutative, legal, and distributive justice covers all aspects of the person, because it includes his rights as well as his duties as individual, and at the same time demands and safeguards the rights and duties that derive from his radical sociability, an essential constitutive element of the person. In this regard, justice has been the aspiration and duty of every epoch, Plato wrote, and is not the creation of justice the institution of a natural order and government of one by another in the parts of the soul, and the creation of justice the production of a state of things at variance with the natural order? For its part, Christian tradition supports the undeniable religious dimension of the concept of justice and just with regard to the human being's conduct before God, and points out the relationship of justice with the social order. You see these two levels, the justice with God and the justice with the others. In our day, the word justice is one of the most frequently used terms in social and political life. In many cases, it is the key or joker of political, economical, and social declarations in numerous national and international forums. The continuous use, and many times abuse, of it by certain ideologies has endowed it with various meanings. In fact, the word justice, you need always to clarify what justice are you talking about. despite the clarity of the definition of justice, its own proper meaning must be correctly interpreted and defended in each case as a primary subject. If this does not happen, justice will be subject to the arbitration of the powerful of the moment. Indeed, it could happen that justice, which should pave the way of peace, might lose its true meaning and actually provoke extreme violence. Injustice always sprouts violence. At the present time, social, economical, and political injustice is giving rise to many wars, tensions, and conflicts. In the face of war, peace, the fruit of justice and solidarity, should be presented. Surmounting every type of imperialism and determination to preserve their own hegemony, the stronger and richer nations must have a sense of moral responsibility for the other nations, so that a real international system may be established which will rest on the foundation of the equality of all peoples and on the necessary respect for their legitimate defenses. The economically weaker countries, or those still at subsistence level, must be enabled, with the assistance of other people and of the international community, to make a contribution to their own, to the common good, with their treasure of humanity and culture, which otherwise could be lost forever. This is taken by Jean Paul, Encyclica Solicitudo Rei Socialis, number 39. And, you know, sometimes we say, well, what we can do? Other powers, other countries, other international organizations are much richer than many countries. But we have the richness of faith, love, family, values. We need to bring this like a help for society. We don't want a society made by technicians, economicians. We want a society made by happy people living in families and always being something, politicians, militaries, whatever, no? But coming from the family. The family is not an accessory, an extrinsic structure to the human person. On the contrary, it is the privileged context for the development and growth of the person's personality, in conformity with the needs of the person's constitutive social dimension. The family, founded on love and enlivened by it, is the place where every person is called to experience, appropriate, and participate in what love without which man could not live, and his whole life would be deprived of meaning. Hence, the value of love, together with that of freedom and justice, has a central place in the family's role in society. In the Christian proposal, charity holds supremacy. Charity includes and incarnates all the virtues, since it consists in participations in the life of Christ, the perfect man. Although it is certain that some differences exist with regard to their specific aim, charity and justice can and must be integrated. To reach this end, and if it is hoped that both virtues complement each other for the resolution of social problems, they must correspond with the following thesis. And I will say that 3 points. There is no love without justice. There is no justice if love is lacking. The practice of justice is an ongoing condition for charity. The love without justice, justice without love, justice is an ongoing condition for charity. And, you know, for human justice, justice is the law, is something here, and love is in here. And many times it's not perfect, even it's not good balance. But in God, justice and love is the same. It's perfect unity. We must take in care this model of justice, the God model of justice and love. But let's go back to this thesis. There is no love without justice. Charity has the character of an end, whereas justice functions as the means. Therefore, since it is impossible to reach an end without the use of means, likewise charity will be lacking in social coexistence if justice, the means, is absent in social life. In observing so many forms of social injustice, we can only conclude that we are still very far from achieving charity. B. There is no justice if love is lacking. The very doctrine of relations between means and end confirmed this thesis. Since there is no sense in striving to adopt means, justice, to have no end, charity, in view. C. The practice of injustice is an ongoing condition for charity. A state of justice facilitates permanent charitable relationship between individual persons, and on the contrary, injustice is constant source of conflict. This is very clear. When love is reigning, you have unity. When the love is absent, you have divisions, divide, devil, the demon. It is therefore particularly appropriate to combine the practice of justice and charity, which are, as it were, the sublime laws of the social order. In this regard, Jean-Paul II writes, justice alone is not enough. Historical experience has led to formulating of saying, summum ius, summa injuria. 5. This is took from a message of Jean-Paul II for the World Day of Peace in 2004. Family, school of justice, love, and peace. Various sociological statistics shows that family, in addition to being the most appreciated institution, 94, 99, 97%, depending different polls, and we were talking the other day about this. It's interesting that politicians and sociologists and even psychologists say that people don't care about family and marriage anymore, but when the polls go around and saying what is the more important place for you, they say family. Mm-hmm. And people want to to take care of their families. The most appreciated institution in families and reference point for people makes a vital contribution to social cohesion. In fact, relations established within families, paternal, filial, fraternal, intergenerational, foster the social responsibility for the family group. And in fact, there is no relationship like the one you can have with your mother, your father, your son, your daughter. It's so unique, you know. Who does the family achieve social cohesion? Various sociological indicators show that the family obtains social cohesion by means of its fertility that assures the continuation of the generations, and that in it one's identity is grasped. I am a child because I have a father, I am a father because I have a child, which consolidates the rooting of identity as an element that shapes the personality. You remember, until a few years ago, when you were introduced in society, everybody recognized you at the beginning like the son or the daughter of this or that. No, that was your identity. No, you belong to that house, no? To that town. On the other hand, due to the free giving that dominates its nature and dynamism, the family can pass no moral values and offer integral assistance because it is a spiritual womb. In these conditions, the family is enabled to carry out its proper role, the principle of subsidiarity, which consists in being the educator of the new generations. We don't have enough time to speak about family and the principle of subsidiarity, which could be very important, interesting, because the states must be very aware about the subsidiarity of the roles in society, especially related with the family. And you know, we have ideological lobbies today to destroy the family and to don't give the family any relevance in society. And also, they try to make decisions and the level of families, education of the children, that don't belong to the state, belong to the family. And the family ask for help to the state. And this is subsidiarity. When we cannot do like citizens by our own, we need to ask help from a major structure, an organization, and the state. But the state itself, it doesn't have the right to decide about the family in many issues. But this is a very delicate and difficult balance to do. But we must be aware because, for example, in Latin America, but in many European countries, you know, we are really challenges to live our values because the state goes and goes and goes and direct university, direct the television set, direct the newspapers, direct, you know, and they are imposing the subsidiary role. And if you want to go to a different school, you need to pay for that, and the state say, I don't need to give you any help because I am paying the public schools. But if the public schools don't give what people are needing, the state must help them. Otherwise, they gave their hegemonic perspective, you know, what the political party, which is in the state, give to the schools. This is part of the crisis of education in many countries. The state tried to direct the contents, the subjects of the education, and make disasters because they are not educators, they are politicians, you know, and just go to your place, you know. And I'm talking about my country, not other countries. Okay. In fact, the complementarity of parents and the stable commitments of spouses make possible the task of integral education to demand constancy, generosity, and lasting dedication. This educational process is never completed, which is why the family reference is indispensable for forming a mature personality that contributes to society, the values passes on it in the family. As Marguerite Dubois has said so beautifully, children do not grow under their parents, but beside them, not in their shadow, but in their light. And this is beautiful because sometimes it's strange to see young people looking in books how to deliver a baby, to educate a child. They need books now. In our generation, they need mothers. And you saw your mother, your father, and you get the book, you know. And we must try to recuperate part of this. The family is the school of justice and peace because it educates in and for the truth, in and for freedom, and in and for social life. The genuinely educative action of the family consists in fitting the roots of truth to the wings of freedom. It is in this circle among truth and freedom that the values of dialogue, the sequela, responsibility, exigency, discipline, respect, sacrifice, and balance can be transmitted. Is society convinced that these and other values for building a just and peaceful society are lacking? This then is the oxygenate lifeblood that the family can bring to society. The social capital that the family contributes is of indisputable value since it enables a full use of the individual and social dimensions that every human being possesses. Hence, common sense and logic are every day increasingly committed to strengthening the family as the true sources of justice and peace. The family is called to be protagonists of peace, over and above the threats and problems of to coexistence and interpersonal and international relations that are surfacing today in so many forms. The family is the context in which every person is helped to attain the full maturity that will enable him to build a society at harmony, solidarity, of peace. And this is a nice reflection that we can do with the university, for example. University try to help students to obtain a degree. Family try to help everyone to obtain the full maturity that would enable to build in society. And I'm not regret about university. I spent my life teaching in the university, but it's just a part-time job. The full-time job is to prepare persons to be really saints. In fact, the healthy family life, certain essential elements are experienced. Justice and love between brothers and sisters, normally, you know. And I have several sisters, and when we have problems in family, mother says, well, the boys will resolve the problem, you know, because the boys were the ones who were fighting against the girls, you know, in the family. Was a kind of neo-feminist at that time. Why the girls don't do that? Because you will do. The justice and love between brothers and sisters, the parents' role of authority, another very difficult word. Parents are afraid to use their nature authority. They have the authority because fathers. Parents' authority, affectionate service to the weakest, to the elder and to the sick, mutual help in life's necessities, the willingness to welcome others and, if necessary, to forgive them. Forgive, the forgiveness, another difficult word in our times. You see, we need to speak about love your enemy, or at least forgive them, you know. But it's very frequent, even the families, you know, saying, well, Father, that's very nice, but you don't know my sister-in-law. Wow, if you know her, you know. For not speak about the mothers-in-law, they're more famous mothers-in-law. No. No. Oh, I will not forgive my cousin because, you know, he took, I don't know what, he took the vessel that belongs to my grandmother, and it was for me, and he took it. Never speak again with him because that flower dies. No. Oh boy. Okay, let's go to the conference. For this reason, the family is the first and indispensable teacher of peace. Experience shows adequately that the values nurtured in the family are a very significant element in the moral development of the social relations of which the fabrics of society is woven. The stability of peoples depends on the unity, fidelity, and fertility of the family as the foundation of society. Members of a family must be conscientious of their central role in the cause of peace through education in human values within the family and through each of its members' participation in the life of society outside the family. Moreover, recognizing the right of family to be supported in this role, the state must see that laws are oriented to promoting them, helping them to carry out their task. In the face of the increasing pressures nowadays to consider as legally equivalent to the union of spouses forms of union which, by their very nature or their intentional lack of permanence, are in no way capable to expressing the meaning and ensuring the good of the family. It is the duty of the state to encourage and protect the authentic institution of the family, respecting its natural structure and its innate and inalienable rights. And this is important. We recognize different problems that we have in society, different realities, but we need to improve the real family, the values, the authentic institution of the family. Among these, the fundamental one is the right of parents to decide freely and responsibly on the basis of their moral and religious convictions and with a properly formed conscience when to have a child and then to educate that child in accordance with those convictions. Supporting families in the various contexts in which their life develops make an objective contribution to building peace, and however, even unknowingly, circumstances, the institution of the family undermines peace in the entire community, national and international, since he witnessed what is in effect the primary agency of peace. Let's go to conclusions, and we have time for all the review. We can now summarize the answer to the question, what does the family contribute in society, and what means in the magisterium of the Church? First, the family is a guarantee of society's future. In it, the fundamental good of human life is transmitted and suitable conditions for the integral education of children are found. The family offers the treasure of procreation and makes a crucial contribution to ensuring that children become good citizens. Second, the family transmits the cultural heritage. It is in the bosom of the family that culture is passed on as a specific way of man's existence and being. The integration of each individual in his national community, language, customs, tradition is begun in the family, ensuring the subsistence of the people to which each one belongs. In the family history, through dialogue with the parents and grandparents, an especially important dialogue between generations is recognized. It produces a living memory that forgives personal identity. And you know, when you came to Malta and you realize how difficult is your language for us, you know, we say, well, but the Maltese children are very intelligent because they speak Maltese since little boys or little girls, you know, because they learn in the family. Now, when you don't learn language, culture, religion, faith in the family, it's much more difficult to learn. Third, the family contributes far more to society than the sum of each one of its members could, because the common good is fostered in it. Therefore, in its absence, the family, society could not receive this extra proper to the family. As we have pointed out, the common familial good does not consist only in what is good for each one of its members, but in what is good for the whole, thereby nourishing development and social cohesion. Four, the family, in addition to guarantee stability, is advantage for administration. In fact, as well as providing people for economical production, it is a factor of social cohesion and often acts as a supportive base in the face of various adverse situations. The family in our time has become the nucleus of stability for its member, with problems of unemployment, illness, dependence, or marginalization, alleviating the tragic effects of these problems caused. The family today is the primary nucleus of solidarity in society, which can accomplish that it is difficult for the public administration to do. Fifth, the family is the first champion of human rights, since both this and the family's missions are directed towards the person. Six, the family and society are interdependent with regard of what affects society. Those we can say, first, the family personalized society. In the family, people are valued for their own dignity, emotional ties are established, and the development and personal maturation of children is encouraged by presence and influence to different and complementary models of the father and mother. And two, the family socialize the persons. First, the family personalized society. Two, B, the family socialize the person. In it, the criteria, values and rules for social coexistence are learning, which are essential for development and well-being of its members and for building society, freedom, respect, sacrifice, generosity, and solidarity. Finally, in the past few times, we were, in the next few days, we will contemplate the Holy Family in Bethlehem, in Nazareth. In fact, this next Sunday we start the Advent, you know, the time. We need to ask love and model from the family of Bethlehem in Nazareth. The Word of God lives in the Holy Family, and though the family has passed on to us a large part of his life, which is the light of every person to know the immensity of what he is called to do, to build already on this earth a kingdom of truth and life, a kingdom of holiness and grace, a kingdom of justice, love, and peace. May the motherly intercession of Our Lady of Good Counsel help us in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor, for enlightening words. We did you before the divorce referendum. So. Before moving on to the promised question time, I now invite Mr. Jacob Portelli to enthrall us with a composition called Nataliana by an American Grammy Award nominee, Deborah Hanson Conant. Apart from his extraordinary innate musical talent, Mr. Portelli is also a graduate in theology, obtaining a BA honors in 2006, followed by PGCE. Considering teaching as part of his identity, Mr. Portelli's main objective is to link music and spirituality to his students and audiences alike. He has recently launched a CD of meditative music by the name of Pelle Strings, featuring choral Renaissance music adapted to strings. Let us now enjoy the wonderful sound of the harp played by a most gifted artist, ladies and gentlemen, Jacob Portelli. Thank you. You are now invited to put some questions.
I put a question which isn't directly related to your presentation, but is very topical in Malta, so since there is proposed legislation in the pipeline. What are the moral and ethical considerations vis-à-vis the dignity of the human person in respect of the freezing of the embryo for IVF purposes? Thank you.
It's difficult to speak after this beautiful music. So harmonic, and not like my English. I apologize. But let's go. Well, speaking about justice and injustice, all the process of in vitro fertilization, especially the freezing of embryos and all the problems came around that, everything is an injustice. The way they work with the cells sometimes, the fact that the new life will not have is not an offspring of a human act, it's a technological act. There is a problem also of the freezing, no? Freezing a person. I would like to freeze some adults, but it's impossible, no? That would be very convenient sometimes to put in the freezer. But it's absolutely unjust and unhuman and absolutely against the dignity of the human person. And any answer we can find or any solution, from the quotation marks, you know, that we can find is always in the area of the injustice. And the results will not be a good. You know, we need to try to reach the point that the scientific development for the beginning of life will be based in justice act, in good acts. No, I don't want to go to the human act, etc. But you know, all the conditions to realize a good act and help. Obviously, these couples that have problems to have children and look for technological medical assistance. Why not? Yes, absolutely yes. No, but not with these difficulties that we are having. The first thing we must do is stop making embryos, you know, and work with them and manage them like material. It's not material, it's our human beings in the very beginning. You know. And it's true that sometimes scientists say, well, but we cannot prove that in the very first 3, 4, 5, 7 days it's a human life. You know. And I said, well, but I can prove you that I'm here because I was a human being in that days. You know. And you know that there is a lot of ideological pressure, political pressure. You know, when the other day we were talking with some of you, the World Health Organization decide by a vote in the assembly in Washington years ago to establish that the human rights with take care of the human life after the implantation was a political decision. No? Oh, but we got a consensus and it's good. The consensus is good in politics, certainly. We need that. Otherwise we cannot govern. But not for moral issues and not for about my life. I would not like to be to risk my future life on the consensus of the voting of some groups, because if I vote with the Christian areas, maybe they will say yes, you will be able to continue living. But if I go to some other governments, they will say no, all Catholics will die. No, and we have a consensus for that. No, we must be very careful to put the beginning of the end of life like a political issue. It's a human issue that influenced society and obviously became a political stuff. But the human beings, we are not a product. We are not something that they can legislate on us. No.
I just was wondering, like, you were speaking about how good family is, and I was wondering, what about those people who were not lucky enough to get born in a good family, or they have no family, And I was thinking that moral values and capability and ability to love can be as a gift from God in some cases, maybe, I don't know. And I just want to know what you think. And maybe you meant family, like, for example, for religious persons, it can be community, a family, sort of. Or the people who don't have parents, they can say, Holy Mother is my mother. I don't know if you meant that.
Yes, I said the common good of the family, you know, because I suppose that any family, if my family is a good family for me, even if it has maybe many stories inside, you know, and my mother and my father are the best parents I ever had. Mm-hmm. Even if I, like an adult, I can evaluate some mistakes of my parents or not, you know, but also some goals. When we speak about the values of the family founded in a marriage of a man and woman, loving the other forever, making, transmitting life and educating the children, we are not forgetting the other realities that we have. Many, many, many. 50% of the children today are born without a marriage couple. 50% almost. Mm-hmm. And that is a reality, and we need to manage that. But we not that reality is not big enough, or is not that not justify that we must silent the value and the gift of marriage and family. And for that reason, we insist in that, not because we don't recognize the other stuff. The Catholic Church is the organization with more institutions helping abandoned children, raped mothers, single mothers, etc., etc., etc. But we, when we speak about family marriage, we must say the teaching of the Church is this one here. And if we don't say that, who will say that? The feminist, the lobby of the gay and lesbians, they will not say that. They will say their truth, what they think is good. Another problem that we have in our days, you speak about love, and it's true. But love is a very forbidden word. If you pay attention, where you heard the word love, in the deep sense of love? Only when we speak about God. And they say, society say, well, if you want to speak about God, this is privacy. It's your problem. Go into your home. Don't bring the God discourse in society, because we are a lay society. No? And we cannot say anything founding in love. And this is a very, an imposition, very unjust, because love exists, and we experiment that. And I found many of my acts because I love each other. I love God. I love my vocation. In religious life, yes, we don't make a family with a husband, wife, etc. No? Sometimes when people say, oh, Father, you don't look your age, and I say, it's because I don't have a mother-in-law. No. And it's true, we have some advantage, no? Like this. But seriously speaking, there is an analogy, always an analogy of family. No? And I say to my friars many times, I'm speaking to priests, look the point we reach in our days. If I tell to you, another priest, another Augustinian, another priest in the diocesan level, I love you, it will be a case. No? You see, two consecrated people cannot say I love you, because the sense, the normal sense is another thing. But I'm here because I love God and I love my neighbors. Okay, we need to rescue the word love and present it again and say, you know, yes, there are many mistakes around the so-called love. You know? We need to rescue the word love, the Lord, the word Jesus, the word truth. For that reason, I try to speak about justice, truth, etc. No, because we need to do that. And recognize that even a single mother, a very destroyed family, they will find a bottom place where they can love each other and construct something. No, in my country, there are very poor areas in the mountains, in the Andes Mountains. And we Augustinians, we have a mission area, and the lowest point is 2,400 meters high. You know? And there's a lot of machismo, you know, and alcoholism also. And when you say a mother of many, saying, well, you know, I can take two or three of your children to help you. No. We are poor, but we are family. They stay with me. No? And when the feminists came saying, you know, you women must not be mothers because that is a power of the men, embarrassing you, making a baby that stop you for a year at least or more because you are 9 months pregnant and after the baby, blah, blah, blah. The women stand up and leave the rooms. Because for poor people, poor women, the richness, the only thing that no one can touch is their motherhood. Is the main gold for them. You know? That means that it's true. There are many forms of family, some of them with a lot of difficulties, but they can live love. And if they reach that point, they start building something. And finally, I would not say that there is no delinquent, this is a robber, who don't have a traditional family. But you know that 80-90% of the drug problems that are related with the family. You know? Even at school, when teachers see one kid coming, you know, dirty, without a proper dressing, so what's going on there? This is a family problem. And even if you can see in the face of the children. You know, that means that we must help these families, but still teaching and trying to convince people to discover the gift of marriage and family.
You said that one of the important points is forgiveness. About 2 years ago in the University of Malta, where the theological brought a German woman who spoke about a very important point, which is regarding repair. You know, nowadays, we don't repair things, we just chuck them away, consumer society. And it said when people are in marriage got problems, they just give up and they don't go for repair. So this is one theme, I think, which is, one could go with forgiveness. It's, you know, repair. And then I would like to ask you, what do you think is the basic difference between cohabitation and marriage? I know there's commitment and disability, but in your experience, what do you think we should put forward to people to understand the real difference between these two relationships?
Yes, in moral theology, we speak about repair something when you try to make justice on an injustice act you did before. But the biblical word is forgiveness, redeemer, redeem someone. You know? And this is the theological level where we can stay. And it's true, repair is a very strange word. Who repairs and who loves something which is repaired? You know, if I give you, it's not new, but it's repaired. Thank you, I will try for another one. But if I have the experience to be, to receive the pardon of God, you know, I know that I'm new. I'm not repaired, I'm new, I'm full of grace, and God redeemed me and bring me to Him. You know? And this is a very important value and teaching of the church that we must also teach the others. You know, you must be new, you can be new. You know? And secondly, the cohabitation. Yes, this is very, very popular in our days. You know? I'm... In Spanish, we say "estoy con." I stay. It's temporary, you know. and it's not commit with that place. I'm staying in a hotel. Well, okay, I'm staying in a hotel. I will not destroy the hotel, but it doesn't belong to me. I enjoying the hotel facilities, for example. No, marriage is a covenant. It's a covenant. And yes, it will have a paper afterwards, no? Like we said. Many, many times young people say, well, what changed a paper? What came? Well, it's exactly that change the paper who says that you are the owner of this house, for example. If you don't have the paper, things change a lot, no? But also, it's not the paper. It's what the paper showed to society you did. What is your covenant? What is your commitment with, no? And it's something that you, marriage and to be together is something that must be in two. No? For example, if I need to carry this plate here, I need help to other one. If the other one take his or her hand off, they will fail. And I cannot reach the goal that we decide to do together. No? It's not only that you change your mind. You changed our plans. No? When two in the altar said yes, they're saying, we decide to be two in one project. Two persons with personality, with freedom, with way of thinking, to the right to make mistakes, and to the certainty that they will make sins. But with the certitude and the commitment and the desire to be back always to God, and in God to go together. And this is a big difference, obviously, you know, the transcendent. You know, people don't believe in transcendence. They believe more in New Age, in some, you know, which is good. I don't say no. I like to hear the music, you know, for a while. After it's very boring, you know. And sometimes it's not the art that we just heard. this is lovely. I don't know if I answer your question, but at least try to do an approximation.
Okay. Just a reflection, not a question, per se. While you were talking about order and the just relationship between a father and a son and a son and a father, I was reminded of a passage in Mark, the baptism of Christ, where a voice is heard saying, "This is my beloved son, of him of whom I am well pleased." Now, if I remember correctly from my scripture lessons, Mark uses the word agapetos, which means you are capable or worthy of my love. Now, if you delve into that meaning, it means that you are recognizing what is my due, and you're giving it to me. So God is saying to his son, you recognize my authority, the order of things. And I think this is the difficulty in families and marriages. For example, between married couple, they concentrate more on the eros side of love. But the responsibility to recognize the other person's rights and needs, and so we disrupt the order of things. So this is my reflection.
Yes, you know that order is a very, very interesting word and very rich. And the dignity of the human being in the magisterium of the church, the human person, is exactly that order, that God loved you by first, and you are able to love God. This is the definition of the dignity of the human person. Our dignity is based in this, the capability to love God, and the gift to receive the God of God by first. And I know that when we speak about dignity, you know, in bioethics we speak about a lot about dignity, and we are very, very happy that in the last declaration of United Nations, I mean the UNESCO, on bioethics, they introduce dignity like one of the main basis point to develop all the bioethics issues, no? With another meaning, obviously, no? But anyway, at least we reach a word that we start sharing. And this is the order. I know God loved me, and I am able to go to love God. And if I create relationships, taking or paying attention on this main relationship about love, everything will go well. No? God called me, loved me, and for that reason he says to Jesus in the baptism, and the sacrament says to all of us in our own sacrament, no? When we baptize a boy or girl, God says again, maybe we don't hear with our ears, but say, this is my loved son, daughter. No? That hear them. He or she has a lot to say in the order of love.
Before listening to the second piece, I would like to remind you of the talk being held tomorrow here at 6 o'clock that will be given by His Excellency Monsignor George Fendo. So you are all invited to come here at 6 to listen to the Bishop. To bring this part of the evening to a close, I now invite once again Joshua Portelli to play his own composition for harp called Joshua, that he wrote especially in memory of his cousin, the late Father Joshua Muscat. was sublime, wasn't it? On behalf of the director and the board of the Augustinian Institute, I thank you for your presence this evening. Thank you for your attention. You are a most captive audience. If I ever need to give a talk, I will rent you out. So you'll be attentive and ask a question.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Augustinian Institute. This talk is delivered by Professor Alberto Boccati.